welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Temi, welcome to the podcast. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much, Scott. It's an absolute pleasure to be on the podcast, and honestly, great work that you're doing.
Oh, thank you so much. So you're saying that now. Wait, now you might change your mind, but hopefully not. We were saying very briefly before we hit the call button, I feel like I know you already because I watch so much stuff that you put out on Twitter and the stuff that you share and things. And it's brilliant. Hence the reason we were keen to get you on the podcast. And like lots of guests, you were straight away, yeah, no problem at all, and giving up some of your time. So thank you so much. It's very much appreciated.
Thank you. And it's a privilege. As I said, it's a privilege.
But honestly, it's all ours. But how are things?
Really good, thank you. Very good. As you said, online has been great, just being able to share and add value to coaches, especially from the journey that I've had to date. And there's so much more to go, but I just wanted to do the best I could to add that value to coaches, whether at the start of the journey, whether those middle, those who are a bit more experienced. And I've had fantastic feedback, and it just really encourages me to do more.
You did good. Well, we like that. We want more. So fantastic. Brilliant. Okay. Well, look, we got an hour or so to talk through a few things. You know, I think part of our conversation is going to be maximizing coach delivery, so how we can be really good at what we do. To be honest with you, it was a very broad topic because with you, I could have speaked to anything. There's 1,001 things we could have chosen. So maybe I've been a bit unfair by making it too broad, but let's see. But that's kind of the general theme to it. But for those that don't know you or haven't seen the stuff you've been putting out there, do you mind just doing a bit of background to kind of your journey and what it is you currently do?
Sure. Yep. So I've been fortunate enough to be a football coach for over 13 years. I've worked across 5 different elite academies. That's both within the girls' side and the boys' side. So I've worked at Tottenham Academy, Fulham Academy, Arsenal Academy, and then through the female side, I was at Cambridge Centre of Excellence for girls, and then also Fulham's as well. And currently, I am the founder of Excellence Academy. So myself and my coaching partner, Josma, we look at supporting grassroots coaches as well as grassroots players, in addition to players who are currently at academies or those first team who want to add to their technical development and just to get a bit more support. I'm an A-licensed coach, do my Advanced Youth Award as well. And then, in social media, I try to share as much as I can about my journey and also coaching sessions and plans and giving ideas to coaches. So on Twitter or X, as we know it now, LinkedIn as well. And I recently last year started a newsletter called the Coaches Newsletter, just to give another deep dive into the experience that I've had and to add more value to coaches on a weekly basis.
And tell me, coaching wise now then, how much time are you out on the grass or the Astro doing stuff now? Or is it kind of more the Extra Academy's work that you're doing? Is that your main focus?
Yeah, so the Extra Academy work, that's been my main focus. So I'm doing a lot more individualized stuff. So players who are on the cusp of, if you like, going first team, going into youth, going into the professional development phase, so the under 18s as well. So that's where I'm at the moment.
And for those of us that don't often get a look peep behind the curtains at the professional academy world, and I don't name names or, you know, I don't want too much detail here. I appreciate you've got to be sensitive around these things. But obviously, you've had a background working at Arsenal, Spurs, Fulham, other places. Is there much difference at that level? And not the playing, I'm sure all the players are fantastic, but in the way that the clubs go about things, is there a very different culture at one place compared to another, or a different approach to how you develop the players, or is it similar?
Yeah, that's a really good question. At the heart of it, of course, the players at the center, but the way, and this is where the philosophy comes into play, the way how players are then supported from the footballing sense is obviously different across the different academies. And then the structures that they have in place. So, for example, I was at also Southend United, and of course, as a Category 3 academy, you won't have as much financial backing as the Cat Ones. So it's you don't have as many staff members, for example. The facilities that you have, obviously, it's a stark contrast. But at the essence, obviously, player development is at the core.
Fantastic. And do you have like a favored age group that you like to support when you're in the system? Or is it like were the young ones better than the older ones? Or yeah. Did you not really mind?
Do you know, they've all taught me so much. Even from when I was a grassroots coach, I remember coaching three-year-olds. I had about 17 of them. And it was just, it was fantastic to see. Some of them are picking grass. I'm trying to manage the game. I'm holding two of their hands as I'm running. So, you know, those moments are great just in terms of engagement. And then obviously at the top end, when you see the level of technical execution of some of the players who I've been privileged to work with, it's really a joy to behold. Interestingly, so I was actually focused on going all the way to the first team and being a manager, influenced by people like Andre Villas-Boas and Mourinho's as he's coming up. But working in the academy system, seeing how many players come into the system and then go out, I personally wanted to try to support that as best as possible. So for me, I think my best, most enjoyable age group, if I had to stick to something, is probably going to be 15s.
Okay.
15, 16.
Well, I've got 15s now. And yeah, like, to be fair, we've had them for a while, so they were right. But you do get, obviously they're becoming their own people, aren't they, very much? So, you know, you don't get as much, they're a great group of lads. They're really good. But you ask a question, you might get a grunt or two. And these are kids I've known for like 10 years that usually wouldn't shut up, but they're at that age. Brilliant. Thank you for that. And obviously, you've done this for 13 years. And I look at coaches like you and the stuff you put out there and where you've got to. And I always think you must have been brilliant from the beginning. And you probably were. But
far from it.
If you go back 13 years ago, like, I'm not saying whether you're good or bad, I'm sure you've learned loads. Yeah. But, you know, has your thought process towards coaching changed over 13 years? Or did you see coaching 13 years ago and you still do the same now? Or you know, do you look at a different light now you've gone through everything you've gone through with the badges and the experience and stuff like that?
So really good question again. And very interestingly, I didn't actually start out looking to be a coach. I was actually on the journey to be a doctor.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So midway
through. Was it the money that turned your mind, was it?
Yeah. Yeah. So midway through it is actually football manager. So I was.
Okay. That's got lots of people, hasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. So I was an avid football manager fan, like I'm sure a lot of coaches are aware, for about best part of 10 years. And I decided, actually, no, this is what I want to do. So I had to set a 10-year plan, because I thought to myself, well, the players that I watch, like Lampard, Gerrard, etc., they're going to be coaches in 10 years time. And I've got to really be able to ensure that I can, if I'm ever going to be at that level where maybe I'll be coaching alongside them, I've got to make sure that I dedicate myself to this craft. So that's what I did. Now, very interestingly, I think coaching is actually a very simple art now, whereas before it seemed very complex to me. And not to say that there isn't complexities within it, but I think it's very simple. The simpler you can explain it to players, whether it be your coaching session, whether it be a particular type of play, tactics, etc., honestly, the easier that it is. And for me, the first port of call is getting to know the players. Who is the player in front of you? What do they care about? What drives them? And then you provide the environment to facilitate their goals. And so for that, that's where I would start. That would be the starting point. And you obviously will then do that through the coaching sessions, through personal interactions, tournaments, game days, all of those different contexts. And then, whereas before I thought, okay, coaching, very practical, you put on the session, cones, bibs, etc. Now I really consider coaching as a psychological discipline and discovery at the heart of it. So you're really providing a foundation from a psychological perspective. And when you have the practical delivery element, that might look different, but fundamentally it's a psychological support discipline that you're trying to create. So for example, if you have poorly managed behavior, there's an attitude of disorganization, etc., it really doesn't matter what session you put on, it doesn't matter what your tactics are, because the players, you won't be able to bring everything together. You won't be able to make sure it's enjoyable for the players. And so I've really focused on that as a key element now. How do I create a particular mindset within the session, before the session, so that actually what we then go to do, coaching as a coach, will be at the highest level possible.
Couldn't agree more, Timmy. Do you think the coaching qualifications support that as well? I agree. I think we, as a coach, you learn actually the X's and O's are quite important, but actually they're not as important as the environment you create and the other stuff around it. And I never felt the youth awards were very good actually at prime some of that stuff, but I felt I've learned more of that for experience and just, you know, making mistakes. And I've started the UEFA B now, and that UEFA B is still very much like technical and tactical stuff, which is great. And I need that as a coach. I need that. But do you think we lose some of that, or don't get enough focus on that, the environmental side and the psychological side, on our journey from the official kind of, I guess, the coaching courses? Or am I being a bit unfair?
So I think more so now, I would definitely say when I did my UEFA B license, it was pass or fail. So it was pretty much, I've got to really know what I'm doing here from a design of a session, from the tactical element, what I want my players to do on the pitch. So the environment wasn't really discussed as it is now with the youth modules, and even with the B and A licenses now. And I did my A license in the a bit later, whereby you're focused on the context. So the so when I had Ben Bartlett, for example, who was my tutor, he'd look at the context and then you'd be able to deliver from there. But the environment is crucial. And I think it is something that still needs a little bit more depth of looking at and how to create those environments. But then at the same time, I do appreciate that the context that coaches are working in, especially at grassroots, is sometimes very difficult to do that if you've literally just come from work and you're trying to get there in time, get the players together, do a session. You've got to come off before maybe the guys who've booked it for hockey are coming on. So it can be very difficult to do that in some of the contexts that coaches have.
For sure. Yeah. Brilliant. Thank you so much. Okay. Well, look, let's get into the meat of the conversation. That's all right. You might have touched on some of the things already. But like I said at the start, I thought with you and the stuff you've shared, like there's so much in there. I kind of got to think, if I got a chance to talk, what could we talk about? And I guess I landed on like, just how would you got your top tips really for maximizing coach delivery? If you were like, you know, not telling coaches what they should and shouldn't do, but your top tips. So tell me top tips for like, you know, actually, if I'm coaching a group, these are things that I want to make sure I kind of got in that session that's really going to help them develop individually and collectively. And I appreciate that's a massively open question. And I've probably like,
no, of course.
If you got to, we could work through them. Maybe, I don't know if you got anything that you can think of that actually that's got to be in there and we can talk about it.
Very interestingly, actually, today and over the next 2 days, I've set up some posts actually around the process to go through for a session plan. Now, I've got 26 steps in there. We don't have to go through 26.
Long podcast. Let's do it. I'm up for it.
But they're in three parts. And for me, the first thing, obviously, you have to look at philosophy, game model. What's the philosophy of your club, from an attacking sense to defending to counter-attacking to counter-pressing? And you've got to make sure that anything that you do is related back to and is true to the philosophy and game model. Especially when you're at an academy, you are an employee of the club. And yes, we do have our own ideas and there is that flexibility to be able to put your stamp on things. But at the same time, you are buying into a philosophy and you have to respect that there's work and there's a body of work that's gone behind that. And to give the players the best chance to be able to thrive and survive and strive through that academy, you have to make sure whatever you're delivering is true to that. Because if they then, for example, they're under 15, under 16, get called up in under 18s, if they haven't been practicing what you have been doing in relation to the philosophy, then it'll be you haven't set up the player to do very well at that level. So it's very important to ensure that you're sticking to that. Something that a friend of mine years ago told me that transformed how I approach session planning, he just said to me, very simple, Temi, look at the game. So I was buying, I can't remember how many session books I'd bought with thousands of session plans. Nothing wrong with that. But he said to me, look at your players, look at the game. What is the game telling you? What are the scenarios in the game? And design your sessions from there. And since then, I've never bought another book at all. Again, there are so many fantastic books out there, but that's the way that I've then gone on my journey, and it seemed to have worked.
Well, I guess I'm thinking, I mean, obviously, if you spin it like you spun it around, then at least what you're developing or designing is specific to you as the coach and your players' needs, right? And straight away, even if it wasn't the best practice or the best session, you know, it's the most relevant one, right? Because you've done it for your players and based on what you can teach, rather than getting a great session off the peg somewhere that actually you're trying to crowbar in.
Exactly. And, you know, we can be encouraged by and inspired by Pep, does, you know, Pep, Mourinho, etc. The top coaches who are really the geniuses in the game in that level, but we don't know what they are looking at. We don't know why they've designed it in that specific way, and so it's difficult to be able to translate it at times to your context. So still take those sessions. Okay, yeah, I'll take bits of those sessions, but then I'll translate it to the context that I have. Yeah. And you want to make sure that you're encouraging the players and not demotivating them by giving them something that may be a bit too much of a stretch for them, just because actually it's something that you've seen at a higher level. And then definitely planning with the end in mind. So you want to set your sessions and have minimal movement required of your sessions. So for example, if you've designed a session and you've had your warm-up, you have your skill-based practice or a technical practice, and then you're looking at an SSG after that, or 6v6, 7v7, try to have minimal movement between. You want to try and keep the players engaged as much as possible. Yes, of course, they go and have breaks, or you stop sessions at times to give them specific information. But you want to minimize that disruption, because as the time goes by, what happens? Players start wanting to kick balls around. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's what they're there to do. But it means that you haven't really organized in a way that allows them to go from one to the other seamlessly. And then in terms
on that
of the...
one, so we call that one delayering, where we put out all our cones for the whole session, and we layer back. So then, like, suddenly by the end, you're down to just the games cones and a couple
Fantastic.
Of balls. And we don't always get it right. And some guys need a bit more work to it. But you're so right. Again, I remember when I used to start coaching at the beginning, you'd have like three different areas marked. So we use half a field just because I couldn't rearrange the spaces, moving the kids around to the different things. But actually, I guess that's an art in itself, isn't it? Delayering back to the end
in mind.
Exactly.
Exactly, delayering. And then in terms of session, one of the things I cannot stress enough is let the session breathe in the first few minutes. You have to let the session breathe. And what it gives you time to be able to understand, okay, if what I had in my mind and what I've written down and drawn out, does it look like what I had in mind? How are the players responding to it? Give them a few minutes to get to know the session. If it's a new session as well, especially which they haven't done before, give them that time, give them that chance. If you need to change something, okay, after 3 minutes, right, I'm just going to move the cones 2-3 yards. Brilliant. And then the players can then maybe start doing some of the movements that you had planned for. But let the session breathe. I think one of the things that I was guilty of definitely early on, as soon as something doesn't go right, or I seemingly go right in the first 15 to 30 seconds, right, stop there, stop, stand still, you didn't do this, no, let it breathe. If it hasn't, okay, right, we're just going to stop the session here. I just want to move these cones. All right, it's a bit bigger, play. And the players know themselves. Like, oh, yeah, great, thanks, coach.
Yeah, you fixed it in a moment, yeah. What about... with regards to repeating sessions, I mean, would you be happy repeating your sessions? Like, you know, I'm not saying like for the next 20 weeks, but would you like go back and revisit a session again to let players build on what they might have done last time, or introduce new challenges?
Definitely. So, for example, at Arsenal, we used to do a 4v4 plus three. and that'll be a session every single start of the session. That's what the players would do, and they loved it. And so it got to the point where we said, okay, well, this player, can you go and start off the session here with the 44+3, and we leave them to, and they can just organize themselves, and they can then go and play from there. And the benefits to that is that, one, you get to play quickly. Players know what they're doing already and can organize themselves. Two, it does give you, just in case you do need a little bit more time to do something, it does give you that time. But then thirdly, you can build on that. You can start scaling up from there. And it's easy then, for example, if you then go from a 4v4+3 to potentially a 6v6+4, okay, the players have the understanding as to what's happened before. They have the foundational understanding to then scale up to that 6v6+4 in an easier with an easier transition than if they don't have the certain they don't have the repetition of it, and also you can have a different focus. So of course you can do you can have an attacking practice 3v3 where you focus on maybe attacking movement, and then obviously you can flip it to working in defensive unit, for example. So whatever session you have will have those elements to it. And you do have to manage that anyway. So even if your focus is, for example, attacking, you will have to manage, right, if the back line is disjointed and they're not one as a unit and they're not pressing, covering, balance, then you might have to stop and say, right, okay, let's try and help them with this so that you can also support the development of the attacking element.
On your first point, Tammy, around the philosophy and game model, I don't want to cop out on this one because I feel like it's an excuse, but I hope it's not an excuse. Like, I quite like the teams that I support to be very flexible and adaptable and almost be able to kind of adjust the way they play compared to opposition. Obviously, in grassroots football, we don't get to know who we're playing against, really. You know the team's name, but they could change from you might play in 3 weeks ago, they might have a whole new set of players in 3 weeks later. The pitches are different. So I quite like the adaptability and flexibility in the team. So we have principles of play, definitely, and we stick to those. But like the technical detail behind some of the stuff, I find it hard because it's quite like, if we're doing that one way of playing, that's fantastic. Actually, we've got to be a bit flexible, maybe. Am I finding an excuse to being a poor coach, or is actually that adaptability bit, is that
not
a fair
at all,
point,
Scott,
to have?
Not at all. That's
I'm quite good at that.
it's a brilliant point, and I've had that in my experience as well, where we've been at a tournament, we said we're going to play this way, then we notice, oh no, actually we're getting overloaded here, we're going to have to change it. It might go against, and then we would go back and say, look, we've had to change it for this reason, because otherwise we weren't helping the players, because actually we're just overloaded in this area and we needed another player, then we needed to change shape to be able to cope with the game challenges. And so I think as well, and when you look at the top end of the game, I mean, you see what Ange is doing, for example, with the fullbacks inside. I mean, it's something that so many we just haven't seen. Yeah. And it's the same with what Pep was doing, for example. And so you do have to respond to that. And I think you do the players a disservice if you're not responding to that appropriately.
Well, it feels like, you know, if we're going to coach youngsters now that are maybe 9, 10, 11, even the 15s, right, to be playing in 5 and 10 years' time at a decent level and be able to, you know, deal with the challenges ahead of them. Football seems to be moving in one direction where it's more fluid and there's more, you know, there's not one way. You can't just take your A game, can you, and go and impose that in your position. And, you know, good way, if you can, fantastic, well done. If you're Man City, maybe you can do that. But I think even they have to change the way they play sometimes, even City do. So if City have to change it, I'm sure my little grassroots team have to change on occasion. So actually helping support players to be versatile and flexible, is that a modern way of where football's heading?
Definitely. And one of the things I, especially in academies, and I would, you know, talk to my colleagues about, for example, okay, yes, a player may be playing these one or two positions, but when they make their debut, they may make their debut in a completely different position. Yep. For example, Saka making his debut at left back. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. You have to have that flexibility to be able to survive at a certain level and then be able to strive and thrive. And that's the model that I like to, how I like to think about it. There'll be times in academies where you're, or even in a grassroots club where you're thriving, then you go to the next challenge and you may just have to survive. Okay, I don't know this position, I've got to learn it. Luke Shaw playing centre back. Okay, I've got to learn it right at the top level. I've got to learn how to play that position and play that position well. Trent, as we see him coming inside now, is number four. I've got to learn how to navigate that position. And so I do think it's something that players, it's important coaches do for players, especially from the young age. I know there's a tendency to, okay, I want to win the game. You know, this player is the quickest, so they've got to just stay up front. But you're not giving the player a versatility from a young age, and it's really important to do so for their development and their learning.
So, Temi, could you talk us through, I don't know if this is possible or not, but like sure. a typical Temi session. So if you had like a grassroots team, an under 12s, 15s, whatever it might be, an hour and a half, you know, I guess first, would you have a curriculum? Would you have like blocks of things you would focus on? And I do understand, obviously, each team's a bit different and you might want to know the players first and that kind of stuff.
Sure,
but just
yeah,
generally
yeah, yeah.
speaking, what would it like from that side of you? And then what would the actual session itself look like?
So obviously, getting to know the players, but you know, is important. And I can probably go off of, you know, experience I've had with grassroots clubs have asked me to come in. So first and foremost, I would start off with some technical individual stuff, and there'll be competitive elements to it. So it might be 1v1s in a, you know, with players pressing from behind or in front. There'll be some technical elements where they're unopposed, or they're doing ball juggling skills as well. And then from there, I would move on to something small sided. So I like to try and as much as possible keep the initial parts of the session high in the amount of touches that players get. So from there, it might be might go into a 2v2 or a 3v3 session, where again that's maintained at a high level, the ball touches. Potentially could have a carousel depending if how many coaches are there. So if, for example, there's another coach or two coaches, I like the idea of having a carousel, just because it gives players it keeps players' minds active. Okay, I've done this session now. 8 minutes, okay, now I'm going into another session. I've got to get to speed quite quickly of what's the intention of this particular session. So the one before, it might be that, okay, you need to score through gates, through dribbling, but okay, this next one is around score finishing in mini goals, and it's maybe an overloaded situation. So I like to have those small carousels. And then from there's something that I found players love, and I learned it at Fulham actually, and I think it's great, which is called, we called it Fulham Masters, and I call it MVP, whereby you have two teams, and within those, you give them points depending on what they do. So you maybe a point for an assist, point for a save, point for a goal, point for an interception. So it doesn't matter which position you play in, there's a way for you to score points, and the players love that. And it gives them a particular focus as well as individuals. So, okay, if I'm playing as a centre back this time, okay, it doesn't matter if I can't score. I can still maybe assist. I can still maybe make an interception, and that will give me a point as well. And so you can tailor it to what the focus might be for that particular session.
Love that. That's brilliant. Superb. And what about kind of like the main practice? And when you got into your main practice, because obviously yeah. you share a lot of stuff out there with regards to positional games, I think, and rondos and yeah. that, and like, you know, wide players. How would you structure the main part of your theme?
Sure. So I think thereafter, and if we're looking at time slots, I'll probably spend roughly, I would say, 30 minutes on the main element. So if, just say we're picking a topic, finishing or attacking play from wide areas, for example, and you've got maybe have a 6v6, really important to make sure that there's realistic distances. So whether it's realistic distance to be able to switch play out to the wide areas, there's a realistic distance within the wide area for combination plays such as overlaps, underlaps. Maybe if you have, for example, your number 10, if you want to go and make an overlap and run outside for your winger to come inside, I'll then try to really focus and hone in on particular combinations that we're looking at. And it won't be everything. It would be, okay, well, if I'm focusing on number 10s making over, recognizing when to make overlaps into the wide areas, the wide players recognizing when to make runs inside blind side. Okay, let's focus on those two things. And then what's, okay, let's peel it back. Right, our midfield three, when do you need to play in? What's the recognition when you switch play? What's the recognition when you go on the outside? And from there, that would then build into the SSG. But I think it's really important to not have more than probably three elements that you're going to focus on. Otherwise, as a coach, you can just become paralyzed in trying to see everything, and actually you end up hardly coaching anything because and it's not connecting as well because you're just focusing on 10 different things that you want to try to support the players on.
So maybe you have three main coaching kind of points you want to get out in the session and work on those.
Exactly.
Brilliant. And would you be focusing on like a couple of individuals or a group of players there? It's like what you said, like trying to create chances or attacking from wide positions. Yeah. You're looking at your 10 and your 9 maybe and your wide players there. You're not ignoring the others, right? But are they your primary focus then in that situation?
Yeah, they would be the primary focus. But first off, it would be the foundation of, okay, do we have height, width and depth as an example? Because otherwise it'd be very difficult for us to, if a wide player is staying inside, if the number 10s maybe they're starting to drop deep to try and receive the ball, it's a bit disjointed and we're not able to get the fluidity of the movement. So it's making the other players understand that your movement, right at the start, your movement is crucial to, and your positioning, your initial positioning is crucial to enable these things to happen. So straight away, even though the focus might be, okay, yes, we want to maximize our attacking in wide areas, you need to understand how your positioning and your decision making is crucial to enable us to do that. And I think doing that straight off the bat will then facilitate for the session going forwards. If you don't do that, I do think it leaves you with a challenge going forwards, and you're just trying to manage the session then to then, okay, we've got that outcome, but actually the outcome maybe didn't come till 20 minutes down the line when if you did that foundation work early, then maybe you would have seen it a bit earlier.
Absolutely. And then into a small sided game, would that be kind of just almost like a normal match, like unopposed, equal size, fully directional? Would you tend to finish off in almost a most realistic game as you can get, or would you still have maybe constraints in there or neutral players or something, or would you be quite strict about making it as most game realistic as you possibly can?
Yeah, I think as game realistic as possible. It's players, although the constraints, which are great for a period of time, players ultimately just want to be free and just play. So as much as possible, I might, for example, for one, if I've got 30 minutes, I might say, okay, this first 10 minutes, we'll give two goals for scoring from wide areas and we'll have some zones there. It might be split into thirds. It might be there's a small area near the corner, for example. Or it might be okay if your wide player manages to finish within the 18-yard area, for example, first time, then we'll give two goals, etc. But then after that, definitely take off the constraints and see, because ultimately, when it comes to the game, there won't be any constraints.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Fantastic. Thank you so much for that. That's awesome. Are there any things that you think as coaches we can sometimes get wrong, or some red flags we might want to try and avoid in our sessions?
So this is actually a really interesting question, because obviously every context is different. But there's one thing that I would definitely say a coach should try to, as much as possible, avoid, is the first point they make on a session being a point to say, oh, stop doing this, or you haven't done this well. Your first point is try to make it a point of praise. Highlight what is going well. Because if you highlight that early, then those players who have been highlighted will want to do it again very quickly. The players who haven't been highlighted will want to be highlighted for doing it.
Yeah.
So you're more likely to get the outcomes that you're looking for, because you've started on that footing. So really important, try and start very, very early on a point of praise. And then in terms of stopping sessions, again, this is something I'd been guilty of for many years. You know, stop, stand still, and that's the way that I'd been taught. You know, stop, stand still, freeze. But it's the moments when you are pausing the sessions. So, for example, you don't want to stop the session just before a goal is going to be scored. What do the players do? Is before, they're frustrated. Exactly. Yeah. And then what happens? Less likely they're going to listen to the information you're going to give. Yeah. Of course, the defending team are happy because they've not conceded. But the players who haven't scored, they're like, oh, I was just about to score. So it's really important to recognize when you're going to stop the session. And if it's just for an individual, you don't want to just point an individual out. It's best just to either walk alongside them or pull them off the pitch. And yes, their team may be overloaded for a moment, but it's better to do it that way, for example, pulling off an individual, than if you're going to stop the whole group. I think if you're going to stop the whole group, it's because you've seen something happen a number of times with multiple players, or that requires multiple players to do certain movements. So I think that's definitely something that coaches should try and keep to. Yeah.
Timely interventions are really important. There's nothing more frustrating when you're watching and you see a session and they might have like a 4v4 on 4 off kind of thing. And it's first goal and you see like a game off like 2 or 3 minutes. And, you know, then the other team comes on and loses in like 10 seconds, goes off again. It's off another 2 or 3 minutes, then comes on and then the coach stops sitting on it when they haven't been on for like 10 minutes. Yeah. Give them a chance. He's having a bit of a run with the ball.
And the last thing I just wanted to say, Scott, is... So I understand the anxiety and frustrations of coaches sometimes around their sessions and wanting it to look right, especially in early on in one's journey, thinking, oh, I've got to get this right. You know, this has to look this way. And it was really interesting because I had the experience back when one of my friends was doing their UEFA A license and it was pass or fail. I said, look, Temi, can you just come so that you can be my right back? Everything I tell you to do, can you just do it, please? So I came down, I did that. Thankfully, he passed.
You could have really stitched him up, couldn't you? You were lucky you got a good friend.
I mean, after the game that I had, actually, quite a few of the coaches wanted me to stay to be their right back as well. But of course, coaching isn't like that.
Yeah,
it's not a case of right. You do this,
not
do this.
A show, is it? No, it's not organized and proved. Yeah,
exactly. And so it's really important to accept that what you have planned, it may not go as planned, and it also can go better as planned. Yes. So try not to get as attached to your session, because it's important that you can just see what's happening and adjust accordingly.
Great advice. Thanks, Amy. Brilliant. And just stepping back then from the session itself, if it was you, I mean, a lot of listeners I know are kind of grassroots volunteer coaches, you know, good coaches and invested in the hobby and the craft. If you were taking the team for one or two training sessions a week and a match of the weekends, would you have an overriding curriculum for their development, or would you go almost game by game and see what they needed? How would you approach like the macro side to it, the thing that sits above the session?
Yeah, good question again. Firstly, I want to say grassroots coaches, you know, I used to be a grassroots coach for a while, do a phenomenal job, absolutely phenomenal job, foundation of football in this country. You know, there's 1.4 million volunteer coaches doing a fantastic job making sure kids enjoy their football and have a brilliant experience.
And it's not easy, right? It's not easy. It's not harder than people think.
It's not at all. Going on your point, your question, definitely I would have a curriculum. So I worked with a grassroots team last year, myself and my business partner. We worked with a grassroots team. And the first thing that we did was look at their vision, look at their training syllabus, and look at their philosophy. And within that training syllabus, you're talking about curriculum, we had macro and micro cycles for them to focus on. Because otherwise, what can happen is that you just respond to the game every single week, and there's no continuity for the players. If you conceded 3 goals from a corner, then you're focused on defending from corners. And then next week, you concede goals from through the central areas, then you're focusing on defending central areas. There's no continuity for the players, and you need to be able to support them with through their development by having a continuous curriculum. And if your aim is to also support players to go to the next level, when they go into academies, there's a curriculum. And so you're setting them up for also being in an environment where there will be a curriculum which they will have to, which they'll experience. And you want to make sure that they have the foundations for that.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Okay. Question. Now, this is going a little bit off piece a little bit, I guess.
No, go for it.
If it's okay with you to ask this,
yeah,
one.
love it.
There's a lot of, I think, even more so now than ever before, a lot of desire for young players to find themselves or get themselves into the academy system. You know, especially if you know if you're working with, I guess, the stronger grassroots teams out there, it becomes a bit of a, you know, a hotbed of, you know, everyone kind of that's the target. Now, I'm not, you know, whether the kids are capable, it's different conversation, I guess. But you know, what advice and tips have you got, as much for coaches as for players, I guess, and how we can best help players to become the best they can be? I'm not even saying get in the academy system, but actually, what can be the best they can be? Because what I see a lot of now is actually just these kids that are good kids with good parents, just trying to basically play as much as they can, and literally playing maybe four games at a weekend, genuinely, and training every day. And I don't know if that's the best way of getting where they need to get to, because it's doing the same thing again and again and again.
Yeah,
and it's it's quantity rather than quality. But that's perceived as the one way to kind of get a scout's eye, or, you know, get in the right thing and stuff. And I'm just thinking, do we need to dial down a little bit and think, actually, what's the best way to develop our players so they can become the best they can be?
Good question. So for me, and I think the initial thing that we need to remember as coaches, and I remember on a course I was on, this was said, and it's always stuck with me. They only have one childhood. And so it's our responsibility to ensure that we facilitate it in the best way possible. And if that is just, okay, they want to enjoy just playing football, and that means one session a week, one game a week, fine.
That's okay.
Enjoy that, and they're a happy child, fantastic. If they say, so actually, I want to go again, I want to do three, four times a week, I really love this, okay, great. You can facilitate that. But just make sure that you're giving the child the best experience possible, because they're just not going to get that back again. And I think it's really important for players and coaches also just to be honest. So, for example, and I know they are coaches, you know, they do the best they can for players. For example, when we've had camps where we've had grassroots players playing alongside academy players, one of the things we tell them is, do you know the statistic of how many individuals make it to be professional football players? And they're like, oh, 2%, 1%, etc. And I always give them this analogy. If you went to Wembley Stadium, there's 80,000, how many do you think will make it? 100, 200, etc. The statistics are 8. 8 will make it out of 80,000. Now, it's not to scare you or anything like that, but I think it's important that you know early on, okay, this is how many do make it. So then if I want to choose to still follow that path, okay, this is what I have to do to be able to give myself the best chance.
Yeah, just that reality.
Yeah, I think it's really important, because even when players get into the academies, about 90% still won't make it.
Yeah. And you've obviously seen lots of top young players. Is there some common themes you see in those players? I mean, is it just the fact, the perception here is you just got to play lots and lots and lots. And don't get me wrong, I'm all for grafting you, whatever you want to get good at, you've got to put the hours in. I'm not saying that's not the case, but there's a point where it becomes more, you know, can productive to be playing too much, where actually, if you've got to perform, if you've got to put that many hours into that certain level of performance, you know, maybe you'll just need to be a bit patient and you'll get there maybe eventually, but that's not the way of going about it. Or is it just like, you just throw the hours at it and that's your best chance? Or is it quality of training and being in the right environments that's a better trade-off than just the hours?
So, really interesting. Over the last few years, something that I've recognized, and I'm sure a lot of people have, or a lot of coaches have, is the amount of additional sessions that even academy players are doing.
Absolutely.
Even on top of what they're already doing at the academy. So additional one-to-one sessions, playing with other academy players in camps, training sessions. I think sometimes players are maybe only getting two to 4 weeks off in a year now.
Yeah.
Even at that young age. Now it's hard to say, okay, well, yeah, you should completely stop it, especially if the player's enjoying it and they're doing very well. But at the same point, it can have the opposite effect that they do all this and think, how come I haven't got to this point yet? Because I'm doing all of this, etc. So when you talk about the quality is crucial as well, because you can train, but you can train the wrong thing, you can be taught the wrong thing, and then you have to unlearn that, but there's only a limited period of time. So it's really important, and that's one of the things that I always encourage grassroots players is get to try and be around players who are academy players. So if there are camps where you can go to it, so you can understand the level of technical excellence that they do have, and that can encourage you. And I've been privileged to see grassroots players, so after 3 years, 4 years, end up going and playing in academies and getting to where they want to get to because of that. So I think it's important to do that. But in terms of minutes, especially if you're injured, don't. Yeah, because if you have a continued overuse injury from a young age, it can be very difficult then when you go as you get older.
Well, look, that's the other point there, I guess. And again, this is a completely unfair question. I'm not answering this as an expert by any stretch, because you're not a doctor. So you could use a different path, but you could have been. But I worry slightly that these kids, I mean, they're under 12s, they play a lot of football and it's all high intensity. Mm. I mean, it's good. Like, you know, it's good. But there's a saying going around now that you may have heard it yourself, no days off. And I don't like that. To me, it's a bit worrying because you've got 12-year-olds playing not just football. We play football as kids like every night, but we weren't like this. Not like how these kids are playing. You know, it's 100 miles an hour. They've all got a ball each. The high ball rolling time, you know, often on 3G where it's a little bit more unforgiving than maybe grass can be. Yeah. Are we set it? And again, I don't want you to ask this in a way that's kind of a statement because of, I'm sure we don't know, but there's the potential, isn't there, that we could have some longer term negative outcomes from this physically and emotionally by playing so much concentrated high level, high intensity football at such a young age. And I think this is the first generation to do this. In the academy system, maybe they've done it for a little bit longer because they're ahead of the game. But again, it's managed, like you say, in the academies, they'll manage their workloads. What they do outside, you can't always manage. But in grassroots football, we've got kids playing for three or four different grassroots clubs, you know, or teams, training most nights of the week, where it isn't necessarily managed. And then they're training really hard. I wonder if that will impact in 10 years' time on knees and ligaments and joints, as well as obviously the emotional side of the game.
I completely agree. And I think it's, if you're doing that, I think the coaches themselves need to say, okay, no, you don't come. That's one of the things, for example, players who I have come to me, I said, look, did you have a game yesterday? Do you have a game tomorrow? When are you going to have a game? Otherwise, no, you're not going to do the session, or we will alter the session, because I don't want to give you can't come to me and then get an injury. Because I've then not done my job, because the most important thing that you need to do is the safeguarding of the players to make sure that from a mental and a physical perspective, they have what they need. So if there are players who are every day, no days off, I don't agree with that.
Yeah. And the consequences might not be today, right? At 12, we can keep going, can't we? But, you know, it might be when you're 22, 23, suddenly you pay the price for what you did when you were a bit younger, because don't know, do we? And it's almost like we're a victim of our own success, because look, the coaching's good. I mean, it's better than the old days when we're standing around one ball between us and passing back and forth and doing things. We fixed that issue, but are we potentially creating another one down the road? But it's an unfair question, because you're not a doctor, you're a quality football coach. So let's get back on topic. I'm interested to know, given your journey so far and obviously the world you're in and what you're doing with the Excellence Academy, how do you see potentially football evolving for our younger players, you know, the YDP phase kind of thing, over the next maybe 5 to 10 years? Are where we are where we're going to stay, or do you see things on the horizon that may change what we're going to be doing with these kids?
One thing I can definitely say, and I've heard it from coaches and even ex-players, that the technical ability of players now is definitely increased on average. So I think that will continue to be the case, especially with the fact of having specialist coaches outside and even specialist coaches coming inside the into academies to help really continue to refine those details. So that I think that that's definitely going to be the case within grassroots as well. You're seeing how grassroots clubs are having VO cameras, for example, using Player Maker on Boots. So the, you know, the advent of tech within football, yes, we might be behind some of the other sports, but I think that's only going to keep increasing within within our game. And one of the things that I would love to see more of, and there's only one club that I've been at where I had this experience, is different sports. So we did combat, for example. I'd love to see a chessboard and chessboards within some, you know, some football clubs, dodgeball that they can play, different sports and games that are just that are engaging for players, exciting. It gives them something different to think about.
I think that's great. I remember going to an Arsenal under 10 session a year or two back, and they started off with American football. They were doing a bit of that stuff
there
running
we are.
Around. It was just
Brilliant.
A bit of multi-sport.
Yeah.
So like, it was great to see. And, you know, I think it also as parents, like, back to the point before about no days off and playing a lot, maybe you're better off playing a lot of football, but also then substituting some of that time for another sport that's a bit different.
Yeah.
So you're still getting the, you know, the physical returns, but actually you're kind of, you're getting a bit of a you know, a timeout from that one's early specialization thing and doing some other sports, maybe martial arts. Or swimming or something is
exactly,
you know, can have returns as well.
And the other thing, and it's, I don't know how much it's talked about, but it was something that I was made aware of a few years ago. I know it's a very difficult topic to discuss, but divorce and how that impacts football players. So I think on what I was made aware of, especially around that age 10 to 12 to 13 years of age, that's where they've seen a higher percentage of divorce happening. And that's obviously an important transition for young people in general, going from primary school into secondary school. And it's how you can manage that as a coach. Obviously, there is, you know, there'll be the psych team who can support if you're afforded that opportunity within a club who has the level of finances to do so. But it's important to recognize that, because that will have a massive impact on the young person.
Well, I think you said from the very beginning, one of the most important things you learned on your journey was about knowing your players, isn't it? And knowing that background. It's not about prying or having to like know every detail, but actually just being aware of the external factors that might impact on them. If they come late to training or they're a bit grumpy one day, let's not give them a heart. You know, it's just know a bit more before you jump to conclusions, right?
Exactly. Success might be a player getting, they might be late, 30 minutes late, but actually they're traveling
they've come
an hour and a half. And actually that success, getting them getting there at that time.
Yeah, it's a win itself. Brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, Tim, thanks so much. Look, I think besides the getting to know your players bit, which was obviously a great bit of advice, you know, the idea of making sure you know your philosophy and your game model, making sure you play it, you plan with the end in mind, letting the session breathe. I love that, you know. And I particularly love the MVP game where you kind of allocate points for stuff.
Players love it.
Yeah, I honestly, I'm because that's one of me kind of games that is. Like, I've never done it that way before. So I love that one. It's brilliant. Before we talk a bit about you and what you're going to do next your future plans lie, just one more question, that's okay. We ask all our guests this question. You may have covered it, so feel free to repeat if you need to, but if it's something different, is your chance to speak. If there was one thing you could change, just one, about the world of coaching and football, what might that be?
I have two, if you don't.
Oh, go on, Andy. I always say, one, but of course you can have two. Yeah, you've earned two, definitely.
So the first one is sessions in a different language. I'd love to see more session in a different language. Why? Because one, as a player, if you're actually going to go to that top level, you will play with players who speak different languages. Or if you want to travel abroad, two, it's a life skill. It's a life skill for anyone. So I'd love to see that. The second thing
on that one, just Chris Quilly, I struggle with doing in English. So like, I would embrace the challenge, but I've got to get past the English my first. But we don't often get one that no one's ever said before. So that's definitely a first, but I totally understand that would be fantastic. So thank you for that one, but go and have your second one as well.
Second one very quickly, are the financial structures for coaches. Now, I was privileged to be at a club whereby they increased your pay depending on as you got more badges, but also the amount of years that you were there. And I know that there are other Places whereby coaches may just be on the same wage going 10 years, 20 years. And it's important, and they need to have 3-4 jobs to sustain themselves. So I think it's important that the remuneration structure is looked at, because I know also of individuals who are doing fantastically in terms of grassroots, and they're still able to work with academy players. And academies have asked them, oh, can you come in? Said no, because I'm getting paid more doing what I'm doing individually than if I was to come into your academy. So there is a challenge that you may not get the, I don't say the best coaches in the academies, but those who
miss out on other coaches that could have been there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's funny because I know quite a few coaches that were in the academy system that have actually moved away now to do one-to-one sessions or anything, because they can work their own hours, they can earn more money, and it's, you know, exactly. Their own families now. It's not that they didn't love it; they loved it before, but it's a hard job, right? It's evenings and weekends. If you've got a young family and stuff, it's hard to, you know, to put the money. If you can earn the same money or more, kind of having some more flexible hours.
Exactly.
Oh, brilliant. So, thank you so much. You've been an absolute star to me. Really appreciate that.
Look, pleasure.
A bit about you, kind of. So, you know, what's your plans for the next couple of years? I know you've got a young one now as well. That's going to take up more time. But, you know, how's things looking for you in the next 2 to 5 years?
Brilliant. So, firstly, it's continuing to add more value to coaches. I realise that I've been in a privileged position on the journey that I've gone on. And there's a lot of coaches who just need support, insight, and I'm going to continue to do that over social media, through my newsletter. I want to continue to grow that and add value to coaches that way as well. And coaches, I've seen that we're looking at a coaching platform with the advent of AI. We're looking at how we can really give coaches what they need through utilizing AI. I can't talk too much more about it, Scott, but
well, it's the, something the podcast that is always background. Open when you're ready to make a formal announcement around that. Well, yeah. It's funny because AI obviously is creeping up everywhere, and you kind of sometimes think, well, how's it going to get in there? But it does find a way of getting there. And I think the people that embrace it earlier and make the most of it, the ones that are going to, you know, have the successes of it being around. So it's exciting to hear something on your radar. And when you can share more, please do.
I will do so.
If people want to find out more about you, the work you're doing, everything else, what's the best way of maybe, can they reach out to you? I mean, you were kind enough to respond back to us pretty quickly, but, you know, is that something that's open to everyone? And if so, how can they go about it?
Yes, of course. So on they can follow me on X at @become_XL. You can either drop me a message on some of the posts I do, or they can DM me. LinkedIn, you can message me as well, Tamsin Williams, and I'll respond to you by message. And then the coach's newsletter. So you can subscribe to the coach's newsletter as well, and give me your thoughts.
I get the newsletter. I love it. I think it's brilliant. I'd highly recommend everyone to jump on that one and get it.
Appreciate it.
The work you put into it is fantastic. I don't know how you find enough hours in the day to put out the tweets you put out and the newsletters and everything else that you do. You obviously manage your time very, very well. And I think the medical profession's loss was definitely very much the football world's gain, Terry. So thank you so much.
I appreciate that, Scott.
Would you come back on again in the future and have another discussion around something else?
110%. Maybe we can flip it around next time and I can.
Oh, I'll be
you.
Useless. There's no way. No. I've got the easy job asking the questions. I don't know. So thank you so much. The door's always open. It'd be a privilege to get back on again and we can join some of this stuff in more detail. But for now, please keep sharing the content. It's, you know, it's a massive help, but I know it is certainly used for me and the people I speak to. So thanks so much for doing that. Keep it up. And I look forward to catching up with you again soon.
Thanks a lot, Scott. You too.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.